When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Yep, here we go again. Last two-minute report. Oh, God, that's fun to talk about. Why does the NBA do this to themselves? I don't understand. This is Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle coming to you live from the Seaport, brought to you by Chase. So the last two-minute report comes out yesterday, right? We're sitting there talking about the two blowouts in the NBA last night. Celtics, huge win. Thunder, huge win. And they released the last two-minute report yesterday for the Knicks and the Pacers in game number one. The last two-minute report for Indiana and New York shows four missed calls in the final 2 minutes, but they got the moving screen one right. So that's, in essence, a fifth call that we have been debating about. And then there were other calls within that last 2 minutes that we didn't even know were wrong. What is the purpose of this? Are we going to go back and replay this game? What are we doing here, guys?
Well, you know, this is about the NBA trying to be transparent and allow their consumers to have confidence in the outcomes of the game, especially knowing now that they have a relationship with sports betting entities. So I think that's what it all stems from, right? Because you had the Tim Donaghy scandal in 2007, and then you had legislation coming in the mid-2010s that was moving toward allowing the states to have sports betting legalized. So I think the NBA tried to get it out of the curve in implementing this L2M just so fans wouldn't feel like the NBA was, you know, putting their thumb on the scale and dictating the outcome of the games and letting it be decided by something other than the players on the court. So I think it's an effort to try to be transparent and have consumer confidence in the entertainment product on the whole and allow people to feel comfortable putting their hard-earned money in bets on these actual games because it draws a higher degree of interest for their product. So I think that's where it all stems from. The L2M is all about trying to have transparency, especially knowing the relationship that the NBA has with sports betting companies.
While I appreciate the transparency, it feels like they just tell on themselves unnecessarily, and all it does is anger people retroactively. Because how many times have we had this conversation about the L2Ms and about calls that were wrong? And to your point, Evan, what are we going to do about it now? It just feels like while the transparency is important for a lot of reasons, I understand that, it just makes people upset.
But here's the thing. It's like a coach or a player sitting here talking about the officials. It's not about what happened in the game that they're talking about that just took place. It's about what happens in the next game in the series or the next game that that official has with that respective team. That's what it is for the NBA. It's not necessarily about what happened on the court the night before with the L2M. It's about the consumer actually trusting that the product that they see on the court, the outcome that they see on the court, is going to be determined by the players and not by the officials or anyone else at the league office. I think that's what it all comes down to, right? Because if you feel like what happened with Tim Donaghy in the 2000s, I think it was 2007, if you feel like that's potentially happening moving forward, then that becomes a problem. I mean, that's why the NBA has the rule about players and coaches not criticizing officials in the first place, because they want to make sure that the fans have confidence in the product that they're seeing on the court.
No doubt.
And that there's not something upsetting the competitive balance that's coming from upon high. So I think that's really what it comes down to. Again, I get the outrage that we have with the L2M because it's like, man, all of these blown calls. But the NBA is trying to basically show their hand and saying, we have nothing to hide. We're acknowledging that it's bad. We'll admonish our officials. We just want to make sure that you as the consumer know that we know that we've got to get better in this area, and here's the report to prove it.
You know, if you actually think about your reasoning that you just gave, which I think is dead on about why they do the last two-minute report, well, then do the last 48-minute report. If we're going to say we want transparency, if we want, like, the last 2 minutes do not count more than the first 2 minutes.
Sure.
A three-pointer in the last 2 minutes counts as 3 points. You know how much a three-pointer in the first 2 minutes counts as? 3 points. Mm-hmm. A foul in the first 2 minutes is the same as a foul in the last 2 minutes. It's just less time to make up for it, right? So if we're gonna lean into transparency, let's lean into transparency. Let's release it. Let's go Daryl Morey style and audit the entire game and release a 48-minute report, or don't do it at all. I was thinking about this. Is there another business or anything in life that you can even think of that after something is complete, they say, all right, here's what we did wrong upon arrival immediately? There's only one thing I can think of. Pardon the interruption. When Tony Reale was doing the stat boy character on PTI before Around the Horn, and he said, here's our errors and omissions during the course of the show. That is the only thing in life that I could think of that you look at and say, where did we go wrong? I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad idea, Nuno coming on the air at the end of the show saying, here's all the things we got wrong. It could be funny, but you get the point. You know, Tim Legler has brought up to us, it's like at a restaurant, a waiter or waitress is at the table serving a meal. The meal's over. You feel sick. And the waiter or waitress saying to you, I wouldn't order that. Well, you didn't say it to me beforehand. You know, you didn't say it in the moment. You didn't get these calls right in the moment. There's no purpose of this.
Also, even though they're being transparent and telling you that they missed the calls, that still impacts the outcome of the game. Them getting the call incorrect still impacts the outcome of the game.
No, it's not that it doesn't impact the outcome of the game, but I guess it's striving to be better. And I think when you have the tangible evidence, you have the tangible report, then there has to be an accountability to that end. Like if you have the officials that made these mistakes when it comes to the blown calls, for instance, the kickball on Aaron Nesmith that wasn't, mm-hmm. if that official, you know, is basically, if the NBA is doing his job, that official should not make that call or make that same mistake in the next game that he calls. And I think that's the part of it where you feel like it can serve as a tool for correction for the officials, while also, you know, acknowledging to the public that we know we made these mistakes and our product is not necessarily above reproach. But we don't want you to feel like we're hiding anything. And we also want to make sure that you know that we're not trying to sway the outcome of the game one way or the other.
But Canty, real quick, what it does though as a fan, now as a Knicks fan, because the takeaway is the Knicks got a huge break, and they did. But then I'm like, okay, so I know the Pacers feel like they got, you know, they got hosed here. Now, when we go into tonight's game, I'm looking at how are the refs calling that based upon the fact that, and they're different refs, but based upon that last game, the Knicks got, quote unquote, what people perceived as big breaks. So that's what you do when you also do this is that factor of like, oh, who's reffing tonight? Is it a Scott Foster game? Is it Tony, you know, Tony Brothers? Whatever it is. Like
the fact that you know the referee's
but
name
see,
is
but
the
that's
problem.
What I mean. But
that's
like,
a problem.
But that's what NBA fans really feel that way. NFL fans out. You guys, right? You had a scouting report on refs. Hey, yep. This is their tendencies. The Knicks have also been doing that is releasing tendencies before the games of these refs. So I now feel like, how is this game going to be as a fan? How are they going to ref this game early based upon, is there any makeup calls there?
Well, I mean, none of the refs are robots, so there are going to be mistakes. But I think acknowledging the mistakes is the part where, you know, you can gain the fans' confidence that the league is not trying to sway the outcome of the game. And that's ultimately what they're after, right? Like confidence in the entertainment product. We know that there are going to be mistakes made, but the league is trying to make sure that you realize that they don't have an agenda when it comes to which team comes out on the winning side of this thing. That's the whole purpose of the L2M as far as I'm concerned. Like I just
But the agenda just in the last 2 minutes, guys. Like, that's the thing. I don't believe anybody's fixing games, but you can in the first 46.
Well, here's the logic behind that, though, and I get kind of where they're going with this. Like, if you think about the first 46 minutes of the game, there's plenty of opportunities to overcome the blown calls that the officials make.
Of course.
Like, there are less opportunities to overcome the bad calls because you have less possessions at the end of the game, hence
correct.
The two-minute report. Like, I get why they're only doing it in the 2 minutes as opposed to the full 48 minutes of the game. So I understand the logic behind it. I'm not sitting here trying to defend the L2M.
Right.
I'm just walking you down the road of the logic behind it, and I can actually follow the league's rationale because of how pervasive sports gambling is, sports wagering is. It has led to a huge boon for both the owners and the players. and they want to keep that train rolling. There's no way that they're rolling back these partnerships that they have with these casinos and these sports books.
No chance.
They're only going to amplify them, but with that comes a different degree of scrutiny, and we've already seen a scandal with an NBA ref in the past. So what they're trying to do is avoid that moving forward, and the only way that you can bolster consumer confidence is to have transparency to some degree. And I feel like the L2M is the NBA's attempt at that.
So we think that all of a sudden they're going to, I know you're not saying this, but like the concept, okay, so all the betting, ESPN Bet will no longer be in bed with the NBA because we don't have a last 2 minute report. It's crazy to even think.
But here's the thing, and we're saying it's crazy to even think. Think about what happened with Jontay Porter this year and how he was banned from the league, the reaction that the league had. Also think about what they're trying to do now when they have this relationship. Hey, we don't want to allow prop bets for players on two-way contracts, trying to work with the sports books to outlaw that. They're trying to take steps. They're taking measures to protect the integrity of the game, which is something that you have to do, because if fans feel like in any way, shape, or form the game is fixed, whether it comes from the refs, whether it comes from the league, whether it comes from the player, there goes your entertainment product. There goes your bottom line. There goes your business. You have no business. So, that is the sacred calf. Like, that is the golden goose. They're going to do everything that they can to protect the integrity of the game, and the L2M is just one of the measures that they're utilizing in order to do that.
The Jontay Porter thing is a great example, and the Jontay Porter thing gives me tremendous hope as to the NBA's ability to find things if they're going wrong in any way, shape, or form. And I don't believe, correct me if I'm wrong, either of the two incidents that they're talking about with Jontay Porter, now formerly of the Raptors, occurred during the final 2 minutes. It occurred during the previous 46. They're going to find you no matter what. Yeah. If you're doing something, they have so many measures in place. The last 2 minutes is just a negative thing for the league now. It doesn't make any sense to do it this way. If you're going to do it and you believe in the full-fledged transparency, do it for the entirety of the game. Release it for the entirety of the game. Nuno's right about what he's saying, is that now we are conscious of, oh, well, the Knicks got the breaks in the last game. Maybe the Pacers get the breaks tonight. Which is not right.
But think about how many missed calls you'd probably have throughout the entire game.
Yeah, that's why they can't do it, because, I mean, it undermines.
But they had 4 missed calls in the final 2 minutes, sure, not including the illegal screen.
Sure, but how would the fans feel about 4 missed calls that they know about in one game as opposed to 24 missed calls in 4 quarters of a game?
So don't do it at all.
Exactly.
No, but here's the thing. I think there's...
No other sport does it.
Yeah, but I just don't think... I don't think we should look at this thing as binary. It shouldn't be 0-1, right? I think there's a level of transparency that the public can process, can digest, as opposed to overwhelming them with information that might not necessarily be met with the kind of reception that you're hoping for, right? Like, it is, you can give too much information to somebody. It's called paralysis by analysis. And the last thing you want to do is overwhelm your NBA fan base with all of these blown calls to the point where they are turned off by the product as a whole. So I just think you have to be careful. Again, a small sample size, final 2 minutes, absolutely critical. The part of the game where you have limited possessions, it's hard to overcome referee mistakes. I understand why they're doing it in that snapshot. If you were to do it for the entirety of the game, I think it casts aspersions on everybody that is refereeing these NBA games, and we will acknowledge that this sport is hard as hell to officiate.
I think the NBA thought the grass is greener on this. Like, they were going to have, like, this ability to prove transparency, and it's just gone the other way. Speaking of green grass. How about True Green? Let's talk about True Green. If you're ready to elevate your lawn game without breaking the bank, True Green has been the trusted choice for over 2 million homeowners. My wife and I are two of those. Well, one. I guess we have one home, but you get what I'm saying. For over 50 years, visit TrueGreen.com and discover the easiest and affordable way to achieve a pro-level lawn guaranteed. I look out my window, and I've got that at home. Plus, enjoy True Green's verified price matching, ensuring you get the best lawn for the best price. Visit TrueGreen.com and transform your lawn effortlessly. That's TrueGreen.com. Your dream lawn is just around the corner.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Yeah, Javonte, welcome to Atlanta. I like it. Michael Penix draft pick, still conversation about, including on our show yesterday. We'll get to in a second on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive can help you protect your home, auto, boat, motorcycle, ATV, RV, and more. And if something wasn't mentioned that you had in mind, find out if it can be covered at Progressive.com. Like maybe the last 2 minute report, you can get insurance on that. Or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE, because it probably can be. I'm kidding on the last 2 minute report. All right, Adam Schefter was on with us yesterday, of course, ESPN NFL insider, and he told us what to expect from the Atlanta Falcons QB position in the preseason this year.
I would think that we'd see a lot of Michael Penix in the preseason. That would be my guess. Not as much of Kirk Cousins at all. Just because he's coming off the Achilles, there's no reason to expose him early on. I'm sure they're going to want to get him a little work. I'm sure it would be more important to get Michael Penix more work, knowing that in a perfect world, he's not playing at all this season. They haven't decided that yet, but sure, there'll be plenty of work for Penix and a lot less work for Cousins during the preseason.
When Shefty said this to us yesterday, I thought my left arm was going to be broken because CC kept pounding me on the arm saying, uh-oh, this is interesting. This was a very interesting comment by Shefty.
Yeah.
If Penix gets a lot of work in the preseason, I can't believe I'm going to ask this, but here we go. Is it better for the Falcons if he's really good or not really good?
No, it's better if he's good, mm-hmm. right? Because you want to be able to justify the draft pick. You want to hit on your evaluation of the player in college and projecting him within your scheme with the talent that you have on the roster. So you want him to be good. I can't imagine a scenario where you don't want him to perform well. But it does open the door for a controversy because you are basically saying that this is Kirk Cousins' team. If Michael Penix lights the world on fire in the preseason and Kirk Cousins struggles early on coming off of the Achilles, then everybody in the fan base is going to be clamoring to see Michael Penix Jr. And I'm not so sure, Smalls, that guys within the locker room won't want the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree on everything, CC. First of all, of course you want him to be good. You don't draft a player and then hope that he stinks, even
especially
if it is the
with
preseason.
A top 10 pick.
Nuno, get ready to make your case on this. Go ahead, Smalls.
They took a risk in drafting him. They want to make sure that he's the right player for the job. Even if it's preseason, which a lot of people don't put stock in, you want him to look good. That's the whole point of this thing. But it does potentially cause some tension within the Atlanta Falcons because the fans, can you imagine if Michael Penix Jr., even though people don't put stock in the preseason, absolutely tears it up in the preseason. You have a quarterback of a certain age coming off an Achilles. People are, the second that Kirk Cousins even struggles a bit, going to be clamoring for Michael Penix Jr. because that's what we do as fans. And I think while you want him to be good, it could put the Atlanta Falcons in a precarious position if Michael Penix Jr. is great in the preseason.
Nuno?
All right. So here's why I think it could be a win for the Falcons and what I think they should consider. He goes out and balls out. There are still teams that need quarterbacks. We're also hearing that next year's draft class might not be that great. So I think teams will ask themselves.
Shador may release a diss track on you. Be careful.
Is Michael Penix better than, Beck or Shador? Hey, what's he willing to, what are we willing to give up for him? And for the Falcons, if you truly believe that, and this is part of that conversation, if you can get 2-3 years out of Kirk Cousins, why not take a haul from the Raiders, potentially from, name a team that will be willing to give up next year's. There was a lot of talk of, hey, what teams should be willing to give up next year's one to improve this year? So maybe the Saints?
He wants him traded already.
But yes. Why, if you're the Falcons, would you make that pick if you want to trade him?
What do you mean? Why would you make what pick?
the Michael Penix Jr. pick. Why would you bring him in if you were just going to flip him? He's viewed as the quarterback of the future.
I look at it the other way. I look at it as a situation where if Michael Penix Jr. is ready ahead of schedule, then you can flip Kirk Cousins next offseason.
I would do that
because
too.
You can trade Kirk Cousins next year, next offseason, in the 2025 NFL offseason, and save $2.5 million on your cap. So, I mean, like, they, to me, like, that's the thing. It's like we're looking at this Kirk Cousins deal as a 2 to 3 year proposition based on how the guarantees lay out in the contract. But it's not as if the Atlanta Falcons can't move off of this deal. And here's the thing. When you get more information about how the contract negotiations between Kirk and the Falcons played out and also how Kirk and the Minnesota Vikings play out, you kind of get some insight into the rationale of why the Atlanta Falcons went down the road of drafting a quarterback with the top 10 pick.
Hold that thought. Albert Breer, Monday Morning Quarterback on Pat McAfee's show yesterday, went deep dive into what CeCe just said.
The Vikings really never backed down from the idea that, yeah, we could take your successor in the 2024 draft. So part of the way that Kirk and his people looked at this was, okay, so if we sign this contract that doesn't guarantee everything in 2025, that they get out of after 2024, and they may be taking my successor in April, well, then I may just be the quarterback here for 1 year, and they may trade me after the year. They could theoretically cut me after the year if the young rookie comes in and kills it. And so he goes to market thinking, I want to find a place that's going to commit to me as the starting quarterback for the next few years, and I want that reflected in the contract. And the Falcons were able to do that by guaranteeing not just 2024, also all of 2025 and part of 2026.
Got it.
And the thought was, okay, going forward, now I'm going to be the starting quarterback here for the next 3 years at least, maybe for the next 4 years. And he talked about the idea of retiring as a Falcon. And never was it related to him that they could take a quarterback in the top 10.
So that's Albert Breer, Monday Morning Quarterback on Pat McAfee's show here on ESPN. And I think what we are experiencing already is what is going to be the single biggest QB controversy, barring something unforeseen, in the NFL for the next 2 years. Like, there is nothing that is on the horizon in my mind that feels like a bigger potential QB controversy than this. Because by Schefter saying what he said to us yesterday, Penix is going to get most of the reps, Cousins is injured, Breer giving the background. It is May, and we're already adding to the QB controversy that is Atlanta Falcons season this year. Right?
Yeah, I mean, there is going to be a QB controversy. Is that a problem? Yes, but would you rather deal with that problem, or would you rather deal with what my former teammate Antonio Pierce is dealing with in the AFC West with Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell as his quarterbacks going up against Justin Herbert and Pat Mahomes?
Yeah. Or what they previously dealt with, Ritter versus Heineke. Yeah, that's exactly. Not the one you want.
I guess my point is you've got the best quarterback room in the NFC South.
Yep.
Which is
no doubt.
Probably the most winnable division in all of football.
Yep.
That's what you want. Like, I want Michael Penix Jr. to play.
This is not a bad thing.
I want them to put pressure on Raheem Morris and the brass from the Atlanta Falcons to make a difficult decision about who's going to be installed as the starter. Now, I don't think it's going to play out that way. I think Kirk Cousins is going to end up being the guy. But if for whatever reason Kirk Cousins is not the guy that we saw in Minnesota over the last, 6 years, then you have an alternative at quarterback. I just don't understand why people are criticizing the move by taking Penix Jr. when the entire league, including the Minnesota Vikings, told you that they view Kirk Cousins as a bridge quarterback. Albeit a very good bridge quarterback, he's still a bridge quarterback because the Vikings wanted to re-sign him and they wanted to draft the guy early. They told him that. So why were you upset that the team that had him for 6 years – that won one playoff game with him over those 6 years, why are we upset that they were going to go down the road of doing the exact same that the Atlanta Falcons did?
Love it. Preach. Preach. Absolutely correct. Couldn't agree more. What is it? Cosine, like?
Like, cosine, retweet.
I'll never get that right. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Brian Windhorst is here. Hoop Collective Podcast, ESPN NBA Insider. You'll see him on Get Up First Day covering the Knicks and the Pacers, and he joins us. Wendy, thank you as always. NBA makes a decision, to fine Jamal Murray $100,000 for the incident throwing the heating pad onto the court and the ref with a towel and everything like that. Did they get it right?
I don't know. I spent yesterday trying to figure out whether there was a precedent for this, and the only thing I could find actually happened to the Heat, which was a year ago, and it'd be hard to remember unless you're a Heat fan. Dwayne Dedman, who I'm not even sure is still in the NBA.
He's not.
threw a massage gun. He was angry at being benched, and he slammed the rack of massage guns. The massage gun bounced out onto the court, and he was ejected immediately, which obviously didn't happen with Jamal Murray. And then he was suspended for a game, but he was not suspended by the NBA. He was suspended by the Heat for a game. And so in this case, the referees didn't see it, so Jamal Murray wasn't ejected. And it was in the first half. Had he been ejected, it would have been a real penalty for him and the Nuggets. And so the reason I did not think this was an auto suspension, but the reason why I thought they might do it is because he was throwing it at a referee. He was targeting the referee with the object, which you have to protect your referees. Obviously, you got to protect the players, so you can't have anything coming on the court. But in my mind, he was sort of guilty of two offenses here, throwing something on the court and throwing something at the referee. And so when they levied the fine, they acknowledged he was throwing that at a referee. They like didn't pretend that didn't happen, and then they only fined him. So I'm not stunned, but I'm a little bit surprised, and it's another L for the refs this week, if you want to ask my opinion.
Wendy, speaking of taking L's, the Cleveland Cavs yesterday, I mean, that was embarrassing. The Celtics whooped them from pillar to post. I remember yesterday you came on our show, and Evan intimated that the Cavs have a shot in the series, and your question was, a shot at what? Yeah. Like, I mean, that's what it felt like in watching that game. And so I guess my question to you is, the Celtics seem like they're poised to waltz into the Eastern Conference Finals. Is that a product of just how good this team is, or by virtue of them not playing anybody in the first two rounds?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. The Cavs right now are in a unrecoverable slump from three-point range. They were a pretty potent three-point shooting team during the season. They couldn't hit anything in the Magic series, and I kept saying as that series went on, well, at some point they're going to make shots. Well, at some point they're going to make shots. Well, maybe they'll make shots against the Celtics. They shot 28% against the Magic. It almost cost them the series. And they shot 26% last night against the Celtics. I guess it's possible that they'll make shots at some point and win a game. But the Celtics are a killer three-point shooting team. They played well last night, but they didn't play great, the Celtics. They shot the ball well last night, but didn't shoot the ball great. They can play better. It was sort of a stretching out of their legs in this one. And, you know, Cleveland is the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference. The Celtics are the best team in the Eastern Conference. You saw the separation between them.
Oklahoma City has been great, but I think a lot of people assumed that because of their youth, this may be a year where they get into the playoffs, get that seasoning, but maybe next year we'll see them be a real finals contender. Should we be taking them seriously this year?
I mean, they're playing spectacularly right now. There's a couple things I'll say about this start of this series from last night. One is Luka did not look good at all. You know, he's got a sprained right knee, and it seems to be affecting him when he does that step back, which is a killer shot. It's one of the most killer shots in the NBA. And he doesn't have that weapon right now. He's 8 of 49 from three-point range in the last five games. He was 1 of 8 or 1 of 9 last, I think 1 of 8. He had scored over 20 points in 24 consecutive playoff games. He had 19 last night. No explosion. And if Luka isn't great, they don't really have a chance in this series. And so the Thunder are already at an advantage with 8 days off that they had playing home court advantage, where it's a great advantage in Oklahoma City. And now Luka clearly being hampered, they're in great position to advance to the conference finals. The thing that they have that's really going for them, they're just tremendous on perimeter defense. Mm-hmm. You know, Lu Dort put Brandon Ingram in a cocoon in that first round series. And Lu Dort's like, I don't know what they list him at, 6'4", 6'5"? Ingram is like 6'9". Now he defended Doncic last night, and Doncic is hampered, and they're using double teams. They have Shea defends on the perimeter, Chet defends in the middle. They really can give you some issues with their defense.
Wendy, fair or unfair, Luka is to Dallas what LeBron was to Cleveland in part one of his career?
No, because Kyrie is there, and he didn't have Kyrie in part one. But he is. They need him to be awesome. You know, I think part of it is that the West is that good. But in terms of the way he dominates everything, dominates the ball, you're not that far off of that. It's just that these in the West, to win multiple series, you just got to really be on top of your game. And, you know, Luka has to be efficient because you know he's going to get a bunch of shots up. It's kind of like Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson is going to score a ton of points. The question isn't how many points does he score. How did he get there? Like, I feel pretty strongly he's going to have 40 tonight again. But is it going to take 34 shots, 37 mm-hmm. shots, or is it going to take 26, which is what happened in game one?
Well, a big issue that the Knicks are now going to be dealing with is the depth coming off their bench, which took another hit yesterday.
Big time, yeah.
Mitchell Robinson, he's got the stress injury to that ankle that was already a problematic for him in the regular season. He's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks, so presumably the rest of the postseason. What does Tom Thibodeau do, Wendy, when it comes to trying to spell his starters and find opportunities within the game to get those guys some rest?
Tighten his jaw and turn his back on the bench. Because I don't see him change. They're going to play seven guys.
Yeah, so it's going to be gonna do. McBride and
yeah, and they didn't get much. Mitchell. They didn't get much from the bench. It was 48-3, or 46-3.
Yeah,
that's amazing. They won that game 46-3 in bench points. So the Knicks, one of their big weapons is their offensive rebounding. They were the number one offensive rebounding team in the league during the season. In that series that they played against Philly with Embiid hampered, they got like 35% of the available rebounds that were, you know, that when they shot and missed, they got the ball 35% of the time. And Mitchell Robinson's a big part of that. He's one of the probably four or five best, if not better, offensive rebounders in the league. And so he's not there. That's a weapon that they're going to now not have. So everything with the Knicks, I mean, they've now lost three guys out of their top eight for the season, because obviously Julius Randle, who's been gone a while now, but still he's not there. And they lost Bojan Bogdanović, who was a versatile forward in the last series. So, yeah, I mean, they're running out of players, quite frankly.
Let's go back to the Cavs and the Celtics. You said yesterday, a shot at what for the Cavs? And that obviously turned out to be true last night. We've already, unfortunately, kind of turned the page, and we're looking at Donovan Mitchell's future. What do you think that the future looks like for him? Outside of Cleveland, I'm assuming there'd be a robust market for him.
Yeah, of course. Yes. So he's got 1 year on his contract. And so the issue is, if he doesn't sign an extension, will the Cavs be forced into making a trade? That's a leap that we probably shouldn't just immediately go to, because just because he would say no to an extension doesn't mean you have to trade him immediately. They may try to play it out a little bit. But if he doesn't, the Cavs are going to be under extreme pressure. The only thing that I'm going to say is, Donovan has been dealing with this knee injury. I don't know the severity of that injury. And because I don't know, I will just say that if you have a knee issue and you're not sure how it's going to go for the next year or so, and somebody comes with a $200 million contract offer, which is what the Cavs will do here, that may play a role. Now, they have not said anything about his knee. They have just said that it's bothering him, but it's been bothering him for months. I have been around a little while. When guys have knee injuries that bother them for months, there's usually something else going on. So the big unknown in the Donovan contract situation is, will the knee injury have an effect at all on his decision? Because if he gets traded, he can't sign an extension for 6 months. I don't care if he gets traded to a place where he's always dreamed of, and he's ticker tape parade happens when he arrives and he declares, I'll never leave again. He can't sign for 6 months. Mm-hmm. What happens in that 6 months? You know? So that's an unknown that we'll see how it plays out. The other thing is, what's Donovan's opinion on the roster? What's Donovan's opinion on the direction of the team? Would he want changes? Those are all things that I don't even think the Cavs have a good feel of till we get until after the offseason, into the offseason.
Wendy, we got about 30 seconds here. You have basically said that with the Lakers job specifically, there are candidates that have said to you, or potential candidates that have said to you, I'm not sure I want to go there. The West is really hard. Explain that.
Well, just in general, like looking at jobs in the West versus jobs in the East, you know, the mountain is smaller in the Eastern Conference. So if everything is equal, you're going to lean towards an East job. The other thing is the Lakers historically do not pay. I say historically because I don't know what they're going to do here. But to get an elite coach, it is now eight figures a year. That is now the baseline. Ooh. So if you're dreaming of Mike Budenholzer, if you're the Lakers, and maybe you are, maybe you're not, they've never been, other than when they paid Phil Jackson, after he won them a handful of rings, then they paid him.
And he was engaged to the majority governor.
He was. That was a factor, maybe. But that is something that, you know, when you look at the Lakers' job, obviously it's the Lakers, but there are other aspects of it that other the coaching candidates, whether or not anybody wants to admit that, the coaching candidates are taking into account.
Wendy, thank you as always. You'll see him on Get Up and First Take, Hoop Collective podcast available on the ESPN app. We're on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Can you remember the last time you had fun on a bike ride? Lectric e-bikes, the number one seller of e-bikes in America, is here to bring fun and joy back to biking. Their riders routinely say they feel like kids again riding these bikes, and one even said, I'm a 46-year-old man, and I can honestly say I haven't had this much fun on a bike since I was 10 years old. These e-bikes from Lectric are fast. They're up to 28 miles per hour. They offer lightweight and foldable e-bikes, so you can easily take them on the go to explore national parks, campgrounds, and more. Even if you don't have a truck, trailer, or a bike rack, many of their models will fit in the trunk of a car. They also offer long-range batteries that provide over 65 miles of range so you can explore further and longer. Just head on over to electricebikes.com today and take their bike quiz to find a model that's perfect for your needs. That's electricebikes.com.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Each and every day at this time, Pat Costello, our producer, gives us items that he is over in and around sports, entertainment, his life, the world. We just got a very juicy nugget, by the way, from Brian Windhorst, basically saying if the Cavs and Donovan Mitchell do work out an extension, we should wonder if that is because of his health and then just securing the bag now and worrying about destination later.
You think he's going to sign an extension?
I think Brian just made me think about it more than I was 10 minutes ago, mm-hmm. Right? You just don't even.
But I feel like if that was a concern, he would have done it by now.
No, but there is a window in which he can do it. I don't know if we're out of that window, so maybe that's why. Maybe we're out of that window, and they could first offer it to him on a certain date this summer because there's very specific day. It's weird with the NBA. Very specific days where you can offer guys extensions based on service time, etc. All right, Pat, go ahead. What are you over today?
You don't want to talk more about service time? No. Okay.
Really.
Mr. Canty.
You better be perfect on everything you're doing here.
I'm just asking if you want to talk more about service time or not. No?
Yo. Okay.
I don't understand how you did not have Jalen Brunson in your top five players that you'd want to start a franchise with. The guy is great, and he's clearly someone that you could build a team around and who his teammates rally around. You don't get that with Giannis. I'm sorry. You just don't. His teammates clearly are not rallying around him. If you're looking at building a window right now for what, 5+ years, Giannis is not that guy, and Jalen Brunson clearly is. Not having him on your list is a huge miss by you.
That is
But I don't understand, though, Pat. We already have proof of concept that you can build a team around Giannis that wins a championship. I don't get it.
They did in the past. If we're looking 5 years into the future. You're telling me right now you'd rather build around Giannis than Jalen Brunson?
So I'm going to take the guy that hasn't done it yet over the guy that has and also won two MVPs on the way to doing that? How does that make sense?
I will go as far as to say.
Jalen Brunson, hold on, let me say this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jalen Brunson has never once been viewed as the best player in the world. There was a stretch of 2 or 3 years where that was Giannis. Mm-hmm. Before this recent takeover by Nikola Jokic. Why would I think that Giannis is no longer capable of being a cornerstone and the guy is on the right side of 30 years old?
I'm not saying that Giannis isn't a better player or hasn't been a better player, but if we're building a team for opening a window right now, it's Brunson all day.
It's not. I mean, like, so much so that I believe if you said to Leon Rose, the president of the Knicks, right now, literally going into game two tonight, you can have Jalen Brunson for as long as you want.
Yeah.
Or I'm actually going to give you a one-time trade right this second. Giannis is going to join your team right now, and you're going to have him under contract for the next 3 or 4 years. They would take Giannis today over Jalen Brunson.
With a game tonight, and him injured.
And guess what?
His daddy
is going to drive to the airport to pick up Giannis.
That's right.
His daddy, Rick Brunson, who's on the coaching staff.
They're going to trade family. Brunson's going to be with Thanasis.
We love you, but we got Giannis. I'm sorry.
I mean, that is
everything.
I appreciate
with
they were,
everything.
The Knicks were a disaster this year. They brought in a top 10 player and were a disaster. And they changed their coach and were even more of a disaster.
There is not even one second of doubt that the Knicks would say, Jalen, we appreciate it. We love Rick. You're going to now be Thanasis' brother.
Is there any Knicks fan that's out there that would say, yeah, we're good with Jalen Brunson. We don't want Giannis?
Not one. Again, as you said, not even his dad who's on the staff.
Hold on. Let's ask one. Nuno?
I am not going to answer this. I'm just going to enjoy the ride that we have at this point.
No, because this is the most obvious thing in the world.
It's just bad juju to put this out there, Pat. I'm not going to answer the question.
Yeah, that's true. If Nuno says that he would rather have Giannis over Jalen Brunson, that could be bad juju for the Knicks
moving forward.
Yeah.
We're not moving on until Nuno answers the question.
That's what Pat is trying to do. That's how diabolical Pat is. He's trying to put the hex on Nuno and the Knicks. Misery loves company, totally. And because his Sixers are at home and because he wants to get rid of their cornerstone player in Joel Embiid, he wants the Knicks fans to have this vitriol for Jalen Brunson, who has had 4 straight playoff games of scoring 40 or more points.
I'm on Brunson's side. You all just said you would get rid of him today. How is this my fault?
Brunson by bringing up the Giannis Antetokounmpo argument. That's what he's trying to do.
Hold on, Pat, would you...
So evil, Pat Costello. You're so evil.
Pat, would you rather have Jalen Brunson or Joel Embiid?
Right now, Jalen Brunson. Not even a question. Not even close.
No, I think it has to be. It has to be.
Well, but that's more of a change of scenery kind of thing. That's not like who's a better player.
No, it has to be Bryce Harper. Well, I mean, like, it has to be a Philly, something around the Phillies, like Bryce Harper or Shohei or Bryce Harper and Mike Trout, like that type of thing, I think, for Pat.
Keeping Bryce Harper?
Over Shohei Ohtani?
Yes. I want to go even further.
Ooh,
how about this? New York Knicks today, knowing Giannis cannot play basketball because of an injury, if they had that one-time trade and Brunson was off their team and they get Giannis, knowing that they would then have about 4 players for this series against Indiana, they'd still make that move. Because they ain't winning a championship this year. But if I told you of healthy Giannis going into next year and not Brunson, they're going to think they're going to win a championship next year.
Agreed.
Like, this is not even a debate. And what
you've done,
this is baseball arbitration. That's what this is. It's when you have to negotiate against the player, telling the player that you actually like how much you don't like them for the sake of saving money. You're actually walking us into how much you like Jalen Brunson. And none of us have taken any shots at Jalen Brunson.
None.
And you're forcing us to actually take shots at Jalen Brunson because you're comparing him to literally a unicorn in Giannis.
Canty didn't put him on his list. I didn't do it. It was Canty's
list.
He put
Giannis on there.
Yeah, and he shouldn't be.
Oh, my God.
What else you got? Because we're not going to win this. We'll go round and round with this. What else you got?
So we've seen this debate over NFL players and NBA players and, like, could they switch sports and stuff like that. But one thing in this whole debate has been made clear to me, that none of those guys could play in the NHL. I've been watching a lot of the NHL playoffs, which has been fantastic. And those guys do not get nearly enough credit because what they do is absolutely unbelievable. Plus, they have the best playoffs.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many NFL players can ice skate. So, yeah.
Now that's
a good
reality. I would
like to see them try. Yeah.
Learning to play hockey, the NFL. NFL at Roger Goodell, we just gave you a great content idea.
I would love that.
You need to go out there and create a reality show trying to create an NHL player out of NFL players.
Imagine Joe Alt on skates.
I will guarantee you this.
6'9".
They will not allow players to fight the way they do now in hockey if you have NFL players in the NHL.
Why?
Why?
Because they're so big?
Yeah, but also because they're off.
Hockey players are nuts. They fight one another for sport. They knock their teeth out. They get gashes on their face, and they still play. Chara had a broken jaw, wired it shut, and played in the Stanley Cup Finals.
They're so crazy they don't even release injury reports. They just say upper or lower body. Okay. Because they're psychos and would go after each other for it.
Okay, and it could be like a punctured lung, and they're upper body injury.
Okay, we're still looking for the white suit from Way Lewis from that Super Bowl down in Atlanta.
Oh, my God.
And the Patriots quite literally had a killer tight end.
Allegedly.
like, what are we talking about?
I didn't see that going that way, I gotta be honest.
You want to talk about levels of crazy?
Wow.
You want to talk about levels of crazy?
Well, I don't have a counter to that.
You know, of course you know. Of course you know.
Yeah, but can the hockey players load manage? That's a level of toughness. Load management.
I don't know. Shifts are pretty quick.
All right, we got to get into this because there is something to this. Austin Rivers blew up this entire argument yesterday. We'll explain next. It's Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.